You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Forgive me. You know how I hate to do this to you. I hate to do this to myself, but sometimes it has to be done. Ladies and gentlemen, NBs and Agenders, the President of the United States.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. Believe me.
That was Donald Trump speaking in July of 2016 at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Trump managed to force LGBTQ out of his vile, lying mouth and promised to protect LGBTQs from hatred and oppression. Log Cabin Quislings and other homocons rejoiced. They missed the fine print. They claimed that Trump would be better for American queers than Hillary Clinton. But only an idiot would have believed him. And of course, if you look up idiot in the dictionary, there's a picture of a log cabin Republican. And an idiot appears to have written the headline at CNN. Trump at RNC, I will protect LGBTQ citizens. Yeah, no. As Barney Frank pointed out at the time, Trump only promised to protect LGBTQ people from foreign oppression. It's not foreigners firing people here in America, Frank told journalist Mike Signorelli. It's not foreigners refusing to serve LGBT people. Trump's comments were very carefully worded. The great majority of problems LGBT people have faced, Frank continued, violence against transgender people, discrimination, come from good old homegrown Americans. So this fraudulent promise that he's going to protect us from foreigners, I hope people see through it. The overwhelming majority of LGBTQs did see through it. Trump got 14% of the queer vote, a smaller share, amazingly enough, than Trump got from people of color. But Trump won the election, our national calamity, and from the minute that motherfucker was sworn in, he began attacking LGBTQ Americans. His Justice Department has argued that anti-gay discrimination is legal, filing a friend of the court brief claiming that the Federal Civil Rights Act does not protect gay and bisexual workers. Trump fired all the members of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS, and he has overseen the creation of a, quote, religious liberty task force, also at the Justice Department. Religious liberty, of course, being code for the right to discriminate against LGBT people. And he's appointed rabidly anti-LGBTQ bigots at every level of the federal government, starting with rabidly anti-gay Mike Pence and on down. And he's packed the courts, including the Supreme Court, with anti-LGBTQ jurists. And this weekend, the New York Times broke the story that the Trump administration is attacking, and not for the first time, transgender Americans. That would be the T in LGBTQ. He has, of course, already tried to throw trans people out of the military, attacked the rights of trans students, and scrapped an Obama administration policy that said trans people were protected from discrimination under existing civil rights laws. But news of the biggest attack yet on the LGBT community broke this weekend. And here to discuss it with me is Parker Malloy, prolific journalist, formidable tweeter, and a trans woman herself. Hey, Parker, what now? What fresh hell is this?
Oh, I mean, this is the freshest hell so far, you know. So I woke up yesterday. Woke up the other day, and it was my anniversary, my first anniversary. And, you know, always good to wake up on your anniversary and look at your phone and read a headline that says that the president is trying to define you out of existence. So
explain that for people.
Yeah. So under existing federal non-discrimination laws, there are protected classes of people. Like people are protected on the basis of religion, race, sex, country of origin. Like there are all these protected classes built in there. And so the question that's been popping up for a long time has been whether gender identity and sexual orientation fall under sex-based discrimination protections. And a lot of courts have found that yes, that, you know, those do, because a lot of them are based on sex-based stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Trump administration, in coming out with their memo, their policy there, or if they do release it, because it is just a draft at the moment, would say that the government's position is that it does not. And then to go even further, specifying that trans people are, in the government's definition, always going to be the gender they were assigned at birth, always going to be the sex they were assigned at birth, and that cannot change.
So a person wouldn't be able to legally change their gender anymore. After you transition, you go to the DMV, you get from M to W on your driver's license, on your passport, your legal documents, and you're recognized by the authorities as the gender that you are. And that would be impossible if this policy is adopted.
Right. I mean, on a state level, you know, I guess that would be up to the individual states. But on a federal level, so you know, one thing that I keep thinking about is passports. Since 2010, trans people have been able to update their passport pretty easily, thanks to a policy put in place by Hillary Clinton, who, remember, everyone during the campaign was like, is she really okay about LGBT rights? You know, I'm sure glad we got this instead.
I want to get in a time machine and go, well, not in a time machine, they're still rattling around. I want to go not throttle physically, just rhetorically throttle.
Queers. You're going to lump into one of those, like,
the mob.
The left mob.
Right. Yeah. But those queers who were running around saying, because Hillary Clinton didn't come around on marriage quickly enough, Trump was the better potential president for LGBTQ Americans, even though he opposed marriage equality and had already produced a list of people who'd appoint to the Supreme Court who were opponents to marriage equality. The mind boggles.
It's obnoxious. But so basically this policy, if it were to go into place, would say that trans people can't ever, under any circumstances, update their gender, their sex from what it was listed on their original birth certificate. They do specify original birth certificate just to make sure, like, even in states where you can update it, like Illinois, where I live, you know, I can update my birth certificate. And some people might say, okay, so what's the problem with this? Why does this matter? Is this just about feeling good, your feelings, trans people, facts, feelings, you know, all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the issue. Let's say I go out to a bar and I get carded. The question is, do I have to out myself as trans to a bartender?
And endanger yourself potentially, because transgender people are often met with physical violence when they're forced to out themselves.
And also defining it this way also could, you know, pave the way for, you know, businesses to just be able to straight up turn trans people away. Be like, no, we don't want your kind in here. And that's scary in itself. And, you know, just this morning I was looking on, there was a tweet from Fox News saying that a man was denied service at a restaurant because he was wearing a Trump shirt. I don't know whether that actually even happened, but they're outraged about one guy. Whereas, you know, the Trump administration might soon be, you know, making this policy that would label 1.4 million of us, you know, as free to kick out of restaurants.
And this is the same Trump administration that already went to court and argued that businesses should have the right to discriminate against same-sex couples in the Masterpiece Cake Shop dispute. And successfully so, they argued that in front of the Supreme Court. So it's fine to discriminate against gay couples, against transgender Americans, not fine to discriminate against one individual asshole in a MAGA hat. I read the New York Times story, which broke the news on Sunday night, and it's in Monday's paper. Everybody who didn't see it should get online and go read it. It's even more pernicious than just you're not allowed to change your documents. It posits that, or it suggests, or it's going to enact a policy if adopted, that if there's a dispute about someone's gender, that a genetic test is the deciding factor.
Which is, you know, that's intrusive. And, you know, anyone who's concerned about privacy should worry about that. When really, me being trans affects your life in no way. And, you know, if you or anyone else is like, but I don't understand trans people, that's fine. You know, it's like, I don't need people to understand, you know, what it's like to be me, because it took me more than two decades to understand what it's like to be me. You know, I don't need that. I just need people to understand that trans people are human beings. And we don't need to be treated like weird fugitives in some sort of dystopian novel with genetic testing and stuff like that.
Being you was a journey and a process for you to discover. Respecting you, allowing you to be you, is asking nothing of another human being. And, you know, this genetic testing thing, what it essentially argues is there's no such thing as a trans person. Just look at the genetic testing. That's who someone is. And so it's erasing trans people. And it just, it made me think as I was reading the article about how they've dragged out old anti-gay stereotypes that were predators, that would lurk in public restrooms to prey on children. And then they redirected those at trans women primarily, that trans women want to get into the bathroom. You know, we need these bathroom laws, which seem to be running out of steam, the bathroom laws. But the argument was trans women are predators preying on children. They were just like rehashing the old argument that they used against gay people while it worked. And this argument seems to be kind of a mid-90s anti-gay argument. There's no such thing as a gay person was the argument in the mid-90s, that we could all be ex-gay, that we're just choosing to be gay, and there's no such thing as gay. Everyone's straight. Yeah. Some of us are just putting dicks in our mouths for laughs. And the argument here is there's no such thing as a trans person.
Right. Well, and the irony in the fact that these are the same people, they'll say, we need to ban trans people from bathrooms to protect women and girls. You can never be too careful. You know, they're also the same people who go gun laws. Not sure if you know this, but criminals don't follow the laws. Gun deaths are tragic, but it's the price of freedom. You know, it's the same argument where it's either that we need to be stopped. And if this was honestly, you know, because some people would then pivot to saying, well, this isn't about actual trans people. This is about men pretending to be trans. Then why have this stuff about genetics and original birth certificate? You know, it's like if someone has undergone medical treatment, you can be pretty sure that they're not just like doing it just to hang out in women's restrooms, which I still don't know what they think happens in there, but it's a lot less exciting than they make it out to be.
So quickly, because we're almost out of time, where can people go to learn more about this and what can people do about it?
To learn more about this, I think that, you know, there are groups like the ACLU just put out something that talked about, you know, the actual implications of something like this. I'd recommend hopping over to their Twitter feed or their website. But as for what people can do, really, it's support politicians who support the Equality Act. If the Trump administration wants to wipe out these protections for trans people, then it's important to get those protections put back in explicitly. So we don't have to keep doing this thing where Obama changes, you know, Obama interprets the law one way and then Trump changes it back. And the next president one way and then changes it back. Or leaving it up to the Trumpified Supreme Court to decide. So I think that that's important. So vote for politicians who support the Equality Act. And right now that happens to be Democrats. I mean, there are 198 sponsors of that bill. Only two of them are Republicans. And one of them is retiring at the end of this term. I get that people want to say, well, it's possible that Republicans are coming around on this, but they're not there yet. And it's clear there is a difference between the parties. And far from perfect, Democrats are the ones who, you know, are better on this issue.
Parker Malloy, follow her on Twitter if you want to follow this issue or other issues impacting the trans community. Don't just tweet and write about queer issues. You tweet and write about all sorts of things, and I learn a lot following you on Twitter. Follow her on Twitter at Parker Malloy. Hey, Parker, thank you so much for jumping on the phone this morning, and I'm really sorry about this, and fuck Trump.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Dan.
All right, again, go to the New York Times, read the story that came out yesterday's paper about this, and go to the ACLU to read what you can do about it, and please go follow Parker at Parker Malloy. Coming up today on both the Micro and Magnum editions of the Savage Lovecast, the sexiest voice in Texas, and no, I am not talking about Beto, and on the Magnum Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads, Dr. Justin Lay Miller is back to talk with us about kinks, how we get them, what they mean, and whether it is possible to rid yourself of a kink that troubles you. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allow you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/savage and use the promo code SAVAGE. Get yourself a great new piece of luggage and help out the Savage Lovecast again by going to awaytravel.com/savage, promo code SAVAGE. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Chappie, the free gay relationship app for guys. Chappie is the online dating app for guys who want to connect, chat, and build relationships. Pause this podcast now and search for Chappie in the App Store. That's Chappie, C-H-A-P-P-Y, in your phone's App Store. Know any assholes out there that need of a good ass kissing or maybe a good ass licking? Give them the gift of the Tushy Bidet. Tushy is the modern bidet that cleans your butt way better than toilet paper. Tushy is easy to install on most standard toilets. It only takes about 10 minutes to do so. So she starts at just $69, but use the promo code SAVAGE for 10% off your Tushy bidet today. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hi, Dan. I'm an almost 30-year-old listener, and I was calling because I was on a mass transit system last week, and I had a man ask me for directions, and as I was answering him, I noticed he had a huge erection. And so I wasn't sure what to do or who to call, and I didn't get service in the tunnels on the train, so I was like, what do I do? And my understanding of what to do in such a situation is that, like, people who do that basically do it to, like, see your reaction. So I guess the best I can do is deny him the satisfaction of my reaction. So I acted like I didn't see it, that he was just, like, an annoyance to me, but not necessarily someone who was, like, skeeting me out. So I ended up, you know, telling the station manager about what happened and giving them a description and all of that to hopefully stop him from doing that to someone else, but who knows. But basically my question is, if someone like harasses you in that way where they're masturbating at you or they have an erection and it's clear that they like want you to notice, like what's the best way to like deter them from, to like stop them from getting the reaction that they're hoping for?
Another case where someone violates a social norm and counts on the other person not wanting to be confrontational, not wanting to blow it up, not wanting, in some cases, to make the person who's violating the social norm or being the asshole feel bad. Somebody violates your boundaries and you sit there going, okay, well, if I confront them about how they're violating my boundaries, they may have a bad reaction. Maybe I feel threatened, or they just may feel guilty or terrible. And even as they're threatening me in this creepy way, I don't want to humiliate or embarrass them. Yeah, we got to stop playing that game. So here's what you do, I think, in that situation. You whip out your phone and you film them. You film their crotch, you film their face, and you say, I am going to upload this and ruin you. Phones have changed the way people perceive police brutality in this country because dumb fucking white people who have pleasant interactions with cops can no longer be in denial about the way cops interact with people of color regularly. Those same phones can shift the power balance in a situation like that. They can create accountability. They can create the threat of accountability. They can also create the reality of accountability. Somebody flashes you their dick or they masturbate in your direction, there's no plausible deniability there. They're doing what they're doing. Somebody who points their erection at you in gym shorts so it's really obvious, and then you're the pervert, if you notice, they're playing a very manipulative game. Pull out your phone, film them, and call them on the game they're playing. What are you doing waving your boner around in my fucking face, asshole? And then put it on Twitter and let Twitter do the rest.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling all the way from England because I really need your advice on moving from a don't ask, don't tell style of open relationship to a more informed and honest one. As a bit of background, my primary partner and I have over the past year or so settled into an amazing triad relationship with a really great guy. The problem we're having is that we're both quite insecure and anxious people. So when we first realized that we were falling for him, we told him that we don't want to know about other people he might be seeing, as long as we trust each other to stay safe and all that kind of thing. But as the relationship progresses, however, I'm starting to worry that this model of don't ask, don't tell could cause problems later. We don't want him to feel he has to lie about what he's up to keep us happy. And plus, if he's seeing someone more seriously, we should probably know if we need to manage our expectations of how much time and affection he can give us. So not only am I not totally sure how to bring it up, but more importantly, I'm not sure what I want to know or what we can handle. We want him to be free to do what he wants and enjoy life, and us being possessive won't help. We have each other as primary partners, and we want him to be happy, which might mean him having someone else too. But still, the idea of him being with other people squicks us out and makes us jealous. So, if we want to be more informed and have more honesty to protect ourselves for the future, how do we do this without making ourselves feel worse in the present? What details do we actually need to know? Every time he has a new date, their names, only if it's getting serious, the details of his feelings, I really don't know. Also, do you think it would help us to future-proof our feelings if the two of us were to find some other dates as well? We're busy people and generally happy as we are, but it might help reduce our dependence and clinginess and jealousy with our third.
Poly doesn't always mean open. There are people out there in polyamorous relationships who have multiple partners, but that's it. It's a closed triad or a closed quad, and it's understood and it's explicit, and it's a commitment that they've made. And you have a right, if this is what you require for your comfort, for your sense of sexual and emotional safety, to ask for what you want and to seek what you want. And if the ideal scenario for you is a triad where your third is only with you two, you can ask that. You may have to give something to get that. Think of it as a triumvirate, not hierarchical, not the primary partners and then that guy, but three partners. And so you may have to cede some ground to get what you want, to get the kind of commitment you want, to provide you with the emotional security that you desire. If he can't give that to you, he might not be the right partner or third for you. But you can ask that of him now. And I think you can just sit with the contradictions. You can say, on the one hand, you know, this is my primary partner, and we feel that you have a right to a primary partner too, but we're so into you and so in love with you that we just want it to be us for now. And you have no way of knowing how long for now is. For now with him might be a couple of years, and then you part ways and you stick the dismount and you remain in each other's lives. And it was a successful short-term triad, close triad. And now it is a friendship and you move on to a new partner perhaps. Or you may wind up becoming one of those long-term committed closed poly triads, and they are out there. And if that's the kind of relationship that you'd be most comfortable with, ask for that relationship. What's scary when you ask somebody for what you want is it may not be what they want. But if it's not what they want, then they're not right for you. And you can part as friends and seek out your ideal third.
Hi, Dan. I am a mid-20s female from the Pacific Northwest. I dated this guy for about 5 months, and it had its ups and downs. We actually live across the street from each other. So one of our bigger problems in the relationship was that he just never asked me to do anything. He would come over and we would hang out and end up doing something, but it was always my idea. And I had expressed this need to him a few times that I wanted him to make an effort to ask me on a date, even if it was just something simple like going to the bar down the street, and kind of promised it a few times, and it never happened. And we ended up having a huge talk last night that ended up in us ending things. But he explained to me that the reason he couldn't ask me on a date was because his brain was not wired that way, that he was physically incapable of doing that, and that he'd never done that before. He also explained to me previous in the relationship that he had ADHD. I'm just wondering if this is like an actual real thing at all or what, because I've never heard of this before, and I'm just trying to get more information as to whether this is actually legit.
Sorry about that noise in the background, everybody else. I think a train was going by as our caller was walking down the street. All right, caller, another simple and perhaps unsatisfactory answer. Why don't you ask him out? Have you tried that? You've told him that you would like him to ask you out, to go out, do some other stuff with you instead of just popping over to your apartment when he wants to have sex. Okay, well, you have the power to make running around and doing some things a condition of hooking up in the future. You also have the power to pick up your phone and send him a text and say, hey, why don't you meet me at this place at this time? And we can hang out and see how he reacts. If he shows up, Yahtzee. If he doesn't show up, if he's not interested in meeting you out in public for whatever reason, then you can date one of the other 4 billion men on the planet. I have to, or actually I get to, travel a lot. I love traveling. Traveling, also a bit of a pain. One thing that's made it easier for me is my new Away luggage. Away makes affordable, high-quality suitcases that charge your phone. No more hunting for outlets or competing for outlets or getting into fights with people about fucking outlets when you've got a piece of Away luggage. By cutting out the middleman, Away is able to offer the perfect luggage made with high-quality materials at a much lower price. It comes in a variety of colors and 4 sizes. The carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, and for you size queens out there, the large. I travel light, so I got the carry-on, and it is tiny, just the right size for me, and gorgeous, and it charges my fucking phone. The carry-on bags feature two USB ports and a high-capacity battery that allows you to charge multiple devices on the go, phones, tablets, laptops, so you never need to worry about a dead phone or a fight for an outlet at the airport. Ultra-durable and lightweight, you get a smooth ride in any direction with four 360-degree spinner wheels that won't get stuck or break. And away luggage is theft-proof. There's a TSA-approved combination lock built in to keep your belongings safe. Even overpackers, like my husband Terry, can fit everything they need into their away luggage because they have interior compression systems that tightly buckles in bulky items. It comes with a lifetime warranty. If anything breaks, Away will fix it and replace it for life. And the cherry on this sundae, a risk-free 100-day trial period. If at any point you decide that this luggage is not for you, you can return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Plus, get free shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states. But you know what? You're not going to want to return this. I love my Away carry-on. You can pry that bag out of my cold, dead hands. I just had shoulder surgery, and this bag, my new bag with the cool wheels, being so lightweight, it's made getting around the airport so much easier. Away has a special offer for my listeners. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/savage and use the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. If you're thinking about buying some luggage, do it this way, please. It's a way of showing your support for the Lovecast. If you're considering getting some new luggage, get yourself some Away luggage. That's again, $20 off a suitcase by going to awaytravel.com/savage and using the promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a straight white male, Pacific Northwest, and I'm 39 years old. The question I have for you today is more of a sociological question, something I'm just wondering, a situation you've heard of. When I was growing up, one in the 80s and 90s, the statistic I heard quite a bit of is the thing about, you know, one in two couples that are married will get divorced. Now, I could be wrong, but to me, that statistic goes back to a time when couples were essentially just getting married to, for lack of a better term, get permission to have sex. And, of course, this means that they, down the line, usually would not get to know each other very well in, you know, key areas, and they would become incompatible in those areas and end up getting divorced. Now, of course, today that's not much of an issue because not only are we more sexually liberated society, but a lot more of the younger generations, the last 20 or so years, do take the time to get to know each other before they decide they want to get married. Now, of course, as you know, some years back, there was the hard-won case for gays getting the same rights for marriage, which I'm very happy that they are. So, my question is, have you heard of any situations in which gay couples since then have actually gotten divorced? I ask that because marriage shares the proverbial two-way street with divorce, and I'm sure that obviously they have the same rights to get divorced as anyone else than if they encounter such incompatibility. Hopefully that they're not thinking that, oh, we can get married now, so we should. I'm just wondering if you've heard of any cases where couples have chosen to get divorced since the time that they were legally able to get married.
That 50% of all marriages fail, the 50% divorce rate stat that rattles around out there, is much in dispute. There's some research that indicates that it never hit 50%, that at its highest it was 41 to 45-ish%, and the divorce rate has been falling, actually, over the last few decades because people are marrying later or marrying not at all. That doesn't mean our relationships are necessarily more stable. People now cohabitate, move in together. That used to be hugely controversial. I can remember when I was a small child, the arguments that the adults in the room used to have about people who weren't married moving in with each other. And you rarely hear that anymore. It's not controversial. So a lot of relationships that a couple of generations ago would have been marriages that then failed are now relationships that were cohabitations that quote-unquote failed. Maybe they were successful short-term relationships, and the people in them survived, found new partners, and then perhaps married those partners a little bit later in life. That's not your question, though. Do I know of any cases where happy same-sex couples have wound up getting divorced? Yes! Same-sex couples get divorced. It does seem that a lot of the same-sex couples, at least in the initial wave of marriages entered into by same-sex couples as it became legal to do so were more stable. So a lot of that first wave of same-sex couples marrying were long-term established same-sex couples that had already withstood the test of time. There's an interesting study out of the Netherlands where they were tracking same-sex couples since 2005, which is when Holland got marriage equality, a decade before we did. And they found of the 580 lesbian couples who married in 2005, 30% were divorced 10 years later, compared to 18% for heterosexual couples who married that year, and 15% for gay male couples that married in 2005 in the Netherlands. I think that study is really interesting, and now I'm going to saddle up my hobby horse. Yeah, lesbian couples most likely to divorce. Straight couples a little less likely to divorce. Gay male couples least likely to divorce. Lesbian couples most likely to be monogamous. Straight couples a little less likely to be monogamous. Gay male couples least likely to be monogamous. Correlation? Don't know. Causation? Don't know. A little bit of openness, maybe a little non-monogamy, stabilizes relationships instead of destabilizing them, which is the predominant view. Obviously, more studies are needed. But yeah, same-sex couples aren't magic. Same-sex couples also divorce. I have some friends who divorced. And as we've seen, a lot of young queer people are marrying early, sometimes out of a defensive crouch. Their families or their faiths told them that their love wasn't real, and getting married is this quick and easy and foolish way to prove to your mom or your dad or your imaginary sky friends that your love is real. My love is so real. It's so real that we met 3 months ago and we're only 22, but we're already getting married. Yeah, please don't do that. Young queers, don't marry young and foolishly. Doesn't work out for straight couples when they do it. It's not going to work out for us when we do it either. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Chappie, the free gay relationship app for guys. Are you looking to find your next relationship or know any single gay guys who are looking for something new? Chappie is the online dating app for guys who are looking to connect, chat, and build relationships. Chappie has a unique scale that does the work for you, whether you're looking for something long-term or something a bit more spontaneous. And pro tip, sometimes the long-term things grow out of the spontaneous things. Chappie allows you to filter the app based on your mood so you can match with guys looking for the same experience and avoid that awkward first chat. All Chappie profiles are verified, so you know exactly who you're connecting with and can focus on having fun. Chappie has zero tolerance for spam and abuse, making it the most respect-led dating app out there. Download Chappie today and find your next gay relationship. Pause this podcast now and search for Chappie in the App Store. That's Chappy. Or go to the link in the podcast notes and be sure to tell your gay single friends to do the same.
Hey, what's going on, Dan? I'm calling with a question kind of about intimacy, I guess. I'm straight male living in Texas, and I don't really like kissing. And it's been a recurrent issue with the women that I'm with because I just neglect it because I forget because it doesn't really mean enough to me. So I'm not giving them enough kisses, and it's a whole thing. And it's not that I have like a phobia of it or fear. It's just, I don't know. I just kind of forget because it doesn't mean anything to me. And I guess so the question is there any way to make me like kissing more? Is there like a book I can read or YouTube videos I can watch or some weird shit that you know about that I don't? I don't know. It's kind of a problem because I'm pretty dominant, and I know I need to show more affection, and I just kind of forget because I'm just not that into it. Any thoughts you got, I appreciate.
Well, after listening to your call, listening to your sexy fucking Texan voice, Nancy and all the women on the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth stuff are ready to fly down to Texas and help you practice. You just got to be honest with the women that you date. That kissing isn't something you hate, but it's not something that you particularly think of or particularly enjoy, and it's not something you've ever really initiated. So what you need to do is tell the women that you date that they're the kissing tops, that if there are going to be kisses, it's going to be because they initiated, and you are happy to make out with them, to meet that need for them, to provide them with all the kisses they require and maybe a little bit of tongue action. But it just never occurs to you to start, to lean in, to plant one on them. But you're there for them whenever they want to plant one on you. But Nancy, again, and the rest of the ladies on the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth, happy to help you out, happy to come down to Texas, help you practice on one condition. You're voting for Beto O'Rourke. It's a crisp, spooky autumn night. You and your date are strolling hand in hand down a quiet street. You're headed to their apartment. You have a feeling that you're going to get laid tonight. Of course, you're going to check and make sure and get their enthusiastic consent and not just go on your feelings. But you also sense that something is amiss. You feel it maybe in your butt area, in your swimsuit region. You go up to their apartment and you duck into the bathroom for a quick spot check. And then you see it, the skid mark in your underwear. And you have to take your underwear off and fold it up and put it in your pocket and hide it and wipe your butt in a panic. What a nightmare. But that nightmare could have been avoided if you had just used Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that hooks up to any standard toilet in minutes, and used it at home before your date, before you pulled on that pair of underwear that is now hidden away. Once you go Tushy, you'll never go back to using scratchy, ineffective toilet paper or toilet-clogging wet wipes. You can walk away from every poop feeling fresh, clean, and confident. No more worrying about skid marks in your underwear or over wiping and shredding your delicate little hole. Tushy leaves your ass feeling confident and clean, and it's only $69. Your underwear will look good. Your ass will look good. Your ass will taste good. Use the promo code SAVAGE for 10% off your order. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old heterosexual female in Canada, and I'm calling with possibly the most unique problem. I am super in love with my boyfriend. We live together. We have a beautiful place. We have a beautiful life, and I don't ever want him to not be a part of my life. But lately, I have been really missing that new relationship energy feeling, and I have some crushes, and I want to pursue them, but he is just not budging on opening up the relationship. So I guess I know what you're going to say, that it's just the price of admission and all of that. But if you have any advice for a young person who's just really in love and doesn't want to lose their partner, but who also isn't sure if monogamy is going to be a good fit long term and where to go once we have that knowledge about ourselves, it would be really helpful. I feel really alone with this right now. So any advice you could give would be awesome.
Sorry, NRE, you don't get to have that in the context of a committed long-term relationship absent a traumatic brain injury. That's just something that you have to sacrifice on the altar of the kind of commitment and the kind of relationship that you want to have. Literally, for the both of you, NRE, going without for the rest of your lives, presumably, is the price of admission that you have to pay. You can't fake it. You could go out and pretend that you don't know each other and meet in a bar, and maybe you could soak up just a tiny little bit of the NRE, not because you're generating it for each other, but in the eyes of other people around you, these two people in this bar or this club who didn't know each other, didn't arrive together, are now making out on the dance floor, and you look like people who went from 0 to 60 in a moment, and maybe you can goose a little bit of that NRE into your life through that kind of role play. But it'll be the aspartame, the carob, the dildo of NRE and not the real thing.
Hi, Dan. I am a 39-year-old gay man. I am also HIV positive. And I have recently discovered I like to be flogged. And I was at a pansexual mixed-gendered BDSM party recently. A straight man flogged me. He went at it pretty hard. He bruised my back pretty bad, which I was really, really into. I did not disclose my HIV positive status to him. I didn't think that it was necessary because we were not having sex. Later on, I'm not sure how he found out, but he learned of my HIV positive status and he got really, really upset. It spread around to the community, and now a lot of these people have labeled me an unsafe partner. He believes that I should buy him new floggers because he bruised me. He doesn't know, you know, if he's going to infect somebody else. And I'm sure that that's not even possible. But that's what my question is that what is the likelihood of me getting flogged and possibly drawing blood, getting it onto the flogger, and then the top moving on to another person, flogging them and infecting them? Is that even a thing, or is that even possible? Am I wrong? Should I be disclosing my status to anybody that I've seen with?
That is not a thing. That is not possible. Presumably, you are taking your meds, and that means you have an undetectable viral load. So even if you came all over that straight guy's flogger, or you came into that straight guy, your chances of infecting him would be zero. Undetectable is uninfectious. There are no cases of somebody using a sex toy, drawing blood, blood getting on the sex toy, that sex toy being used on someone else. There is no evidence out there. None. And certainly no cases where one person has used an impact play toy like a flogger on a pause person and then turned around and used it on someone else and infected them with it. It can't happen. It won't happen. Even if he drew blood, even if you bled all over his floggers, he can disinfect them. He can leave them alone for a day. And your pause blood, which if you're undetectable, uninfectious, has no viral load of any significance in it, isn't going to infect anybody. So, yeah, sounds like you walked into the wrong pansexual play party. Sounds like you walked into a pansexual play party with a lot of paranoid, homophobic, perhaps, definitely posphobic, misinformed, straight people who don't know what they're fucking talking about. I would encourage you, instead of worrying about your reputation in this misinformed community of idiots, to go find yourself a play party full of kinky gay men who know their holes from asses in the ground and aren't going to shame you for being pos or shit their pants over bullshit non-issues like infecting someone with a dirty flogger. As to whether you should have to disclose that you're pos at a play party crowded with people, I don't think you should have to. You might want to avoid interactions like this one with misinformed, paranoid idiots. It might be to your advantage to disclose, but you're certainly not obligated to disclose at a play party where you're just doing BDSM and not doing sex.
Hi, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a cis woman in her early 30s calling from the American Southwest. My question is about erections. I was in a long-term relationship with a man who totally spoiled me with his amazing cock. He was a great size, and when he was totally hard, he was rock solid, and sex always felt amazing. Since we broke up, I've dated a couple guys. The first one, although he was a nice size, never got totally hard, and that was, I'm sorry to say, really frustrating for me because, like I said, I was very spoiled by my ex. I wondered what was going on with this new guy. We had great chemistry. We were very relaxed, open, and playful with each other in bed, so I didn't think it was a lack of anxiety or lack of arousal. But sometimes I really couldn't feel much of anything during sex, and sometimes his cock would even fall out of me. And the guy I'm currently dating seems to have the same issue. Nice size, doesn't get completely hard. We haven't had sex yet, but I'm already feeling disappointed that I won't get that nice, hard cock experience I'm looking for. It just really does not feel very enjoyable to have a semi-hard dick inside me. So my question is twofold. One, is this actually way more common with guys than I know? I've only ever slept with a handful of men in my life, and my first two partners were able to sustain a very hard erection. So was I just spoiled by these partners? And two, how can I talk to my current partner and any other future partners I may have about this issue? I love being able to feel a man inside me, and I imagine it would feel better for him, too, if he were more erect. But I feel so nervous talking to a man about his ability to get hard. Surely, if I notice, he notices, and maybe he doesn't feel too great about it. So it feels like a really touchy subject. But like I said, maybe this is actually how most men are, and my expectations were set too high by my first two boyfriends. I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
If you're not getting the dick you want from the guy you're with, you can move on to the next guy. The conversation that you're thinking about having, how come you're not so hard? I don't like it when it's not so hard. Can you get harder? My previous two boyfriends could get rock fucking hard and I could really feel them inside me and they didn't fall out. That's kind of an ego shredding conversation. And some guys who have large dicks never get steel hard. They never get that hard because there ain't enough blood in them to push into all that bonus erectile tissue and rock hard that shit. Other guys have ED problems, would benefit from taking one of the drugs that are available to address erectile dysfunction, also might benefit from the wearing of a cock ring. And it's also possible that these guys might be having sex with you that isn't the sex that they necessarily enjoy most, the kind of sex that makes them rock fucking hard. They may be going through the motions of vanilla intercourse and trying to play the loop in their head that turns them on and incorporating some of what turns them on most. And it can be as simple as the dude likes to have his nipples played with when he's fucking. Might get him there. might help him get the rock hard erection that you would like him to have and would like to be impaled upon. So maybe before you give up on the guy you're with right now, the guy you're dating right now, have a conversation that Bankshot addresses this. What really turns you on? Have a lay your kink cards on the table kind of conversation. If there are some fantasies that you have that you've never gotten to explore, some things you did with previous partners that you really loved, put that out there and invite him to lay those cards on the table and invite him to lay his cards on the table too. You might find out that what really gets him rock fucking hard is a particular kind of dirty talk, a particular kind of stimulation, maybe a finger in his butt, maybe a butt plug, maybe having his nipples played with. And you might, if you have that convo with him, get the dick out of him and into you that you'd like to get.
Hi, Dan. I'm a straight white woman in my early 20s living in Brooklyn. And I had a question for you about porn, kind of kinks that have to do with brothers and sisters, stepbrothers and stepsisters, and what you thought about them. My whole life, historically, I've been kind of vanilla when it comes to my sex life. I don't really have many kinks, and I think in the past I've been a little bit judgmental of, you know, the sort of like rape fantasy kinks or baby diaper kinks. But I think listening to your podcast has really opened up my mind to, you know, that these are kinks and it doesn't mean that this is who this person is. You know, like what they do in the bedroom is not who they are as a person. But when it comes to, you know, this sort of category in porn that's like, oh, I'm having sex with my brother or my sister, I just can't get over that. And it's really disturbing to me. And I was just wondering what your thoughts on it were. Is it just me, again, being kind of jaded, or is it something that's kind of weird? I just would love to hear your take on it.
Two quick points. Often what someone does in the bedroom, not just isn't who they are as a person, it's the opposite of who they are as a person. And I've rattled off these examples so many times that I'm sure people can rattle them off with me. The right-on feminist woman who wants to be spanked and have her hair pulled and called a slut while she's having sex with someone who she gave permission to do those sorts of things with her, and it's consensual and empowering. The out and proud gay dude who wants to be called a faggot and degraded while he's being fucked, but that's his choice and he enjoys it, and that isn't who he is. He isn't some worthless faggot, but kind of turns him on to be treated that way during sex by someone he would like to be treated that way by. It is the opposite of who he is, and he's kind of wallowing in his opposite. And when you wallow in the person you're not, it's what Halloween is for, it's what fashion in Germany is for, carnival is for, all sorts of festivals, Mardi Gras, are built in where we can just be the opposite of who we are. It then, when we return to ourselves, makes us feel more wholly ourselves, or for people who have that kind of dynamic in their erotic imagination and their erotic life. The second point I want to make, incest porn really disturbs you. You can't get over it. My thoughts, why are you spending so much time thinking about incest porn? I'm not insinuating that on some level it must really turn you on, but it bothers you, incest porn. So to paraphrase the late Barbara Bush, why are you wasting your beautiful mind on something like that? Stop thinking about it. Yeah, incest porn, when I contemplate it, it squicks me out. I understand that a lot of people into incest porn are into the taboo violation, that they're not attracted to their actual family members, that it is a kind of abstraction for most people who are into that kind of porn. But it just squicks me out. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it unless it comes up on the show or in the letters, and then I have to think about it. So I am thinking about incest porn right now because you're thinking about incest porn, and you called me, and now you made me think about it. And I don't like thinking about it any more than you do, which is why I'm asking you why you are thinking about it. Think about other things. You have a beautiful mind. Think about the shit that turns you on. Don't waste your beautiful mind on the shit that squicks you out.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to the woman with the issue of her barking dog when she's having sex, or the playful dog. I know this issue very well. Our dog would love to be snuggling with us or barking at us or humping us while we're having sex. My husband and I are having sex. We can't leave him outside of the room barking because we've got kids. So we have invested in a variety of different Kongs and other dog toys that you stuff with yummy treats. Our dog happens to love cream cheese, so I fill up a Kong earlier in the day,
freeze it. I have like a stash of them. So when it's time for sex, we just pull those out and the dog is totally happy with the Kongs and eating his treats. And filling up those Kongs earlier in the day, it's kind of like a little, I don't know, a little foreplay type thing. You get to think about what this is for. But anyway, that's the way we've handled the situation. And we've been doing that for about 3 years now. Works like a charm.
All right. You asked for it. So here I am. Certified canine behaviorist and trainer for over 15 years. People, crate train and discipline your fucking dogs. Do not drink the Kool-Aid of the cookies and hugs cult. It doesn't work. Dogs need structure and discipline. For all of you with dog questions or dog problems, get your dogs to a trainer that uses positive and negative reinforcements. You will have a happier, mentally balanced dog.
Hey, I'm actually calling with a comment about episode 625, the couple with the contractor that said the super inappropriate joke. And everything Dan said was spot on and perfect. I would just add potentially that that couple should look for a female contractor. And they're out there. My wife is a contractor and she has a great rapport with her clients. She has a lewd sense of humor, but knows when to use it. So yeah, I would recommend looking into a female contractor. They're out there and it's great to support women-owned businesses.
Dan, calling in about 625 and the guy who watched a contractor disrespect his wife. Bro, what the fuck? You have some serious shit to deal with right now. Not only does your wife feel unsafe in her own home, but there is no fucking way this episode didn't negatively impact her level of attraction to you. Even if we take gender roles and patriarchal prescriptions out of the equation, you're still a teammate, and something about the way you carry yourself made this guy feel comfortable fucking disrespecting your teammate in front of you. Even if you wanted to go with the humor route, acutely, the proper response would have been, if anyone's getting dressed up in red spandex and spanked, it's going to be you. As you look this fuck face in the eye right before you fire him. And now you've got some serious recovery to do. Not only do you need to fire this fucking douche, you need to do so in a way that restores some of your wife's faith in you. Time to nut up, son. The wolves are at the door, and you fucking shit the bed on this one.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Tickets are going fast for the opening of the 14th annual Hump Film Festival with all new short porn, comedy, animation, fun films that audiences at the premiere screenings will get to vote on to award huge cash prizes to the filmmakers, including the $10,000 Best in Show Award. You can check out the trailer and read the film descriptions at humpfilmfest.com and then get tickets for the premiere of the new Hump, the 14th annual Hump in Seattle, Portland, Olympia, and new this year, San Francisco. The 14th annual Hump Film Festival will tour the country in 2019. Find out when Hump is coming to a city near you at humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Justin Leigh Miller on Twitter at Justin Leigh Miller. That's LEHMILLER. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.